Michelle Carter told her boyfriend, Conrad Roy, to commit suicide multiple times via text message. "You're finally going to be happy in heaven. No more pain," she wrote him once, according to the Washington Post. When he texted Carter sitting in his pickup truck, seemingly questioning his plan to kill himself, she wrote back, "Get back in." He was found dead inside the truck the following day. He had succumbed to carbon monoxide poisoning. Now, Carter is on trial in Massachusetts for involuntary manslaughter. It's a trial that raises new questions about our legal system in a digital world. Can someone be convicted in someone's death when they were only digital present on the scene of the crime? For more on this, I spoke with Adam Wandt, Deputy Chair for Academic Technology at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York. And we started by talking more about this charge of involuntary manslaughter. What is this charge usually used for?
Involuntary manslaughter means different things in different states, but for the most part, it's considered to be the accidental or involuntary death of a second or third party. It's usually used to charge somebody when they're involved with a death and they don't have a specific intent to commit homicide or commit that murder, but they still played a role nonetheless. It's just something that is so unbelievable that, you know, it raises to a new level of crime, and that's kind of also what's going on here in the case in Boston.
So Heather Carter being charged with involuntary manslaughter in this case, this is really a new way to look at that charge. This would be breaking new ground if she's convicted.
Charging Michelle Carter with involuntary manslaughter breaks new ground in that we haven't yet applied involuntary manslaughter in these types of circumstances. However, if we look back at the law, what we could see is little by little, year by year, different laws adapt to our new technologies and our new way of living. And this is what we're doing with involuntary manslaughter in this case.
Right. So there's never been a case before where someone's been convicted in someone's death if they weren't even there when the victim died.
This is unique. It's unique that they weren't there. I'm not going to say that there haven't been any cases where the person wasn't there in person because they could have done conduct and then left. But in this case, they weren't present at all, and they were communicating virtually via text message. And what they're trying to prove in this case is that they weren't there in person, but they had a virtual presence. And that's going to be really important today because more and more often our presence isn't needed or our presence isn't at the scene of a crime, but we could use technologies to virtually put ourselves there. We could use email or text message to harass somebody. We could use video chat to communicate. We could even control somebody's smart home or smart car when we're not necessarily in the same environment as them. So we don't have to be present in order to connect via the internet and be able to reach out to somebody or reach out to somebody's devices and be able to alter them or change them or manipulate somebody.
Right. So does the digital aspect of this change it in any way, though? Are you really, in the end, is a judge really going to decide in this case, you know, what was her intent? What was the result of the action? I wonder if it's just sort of an interesting circumstance or if it actually will have legal implications, this digital thing.
You know, the adoption of the digital world to our law isn't new, and the judge, of course, is going to research that and learn that. We had very similar stuff happen here in New York, for example, and an example that I can give in New York is the People of New York versus Victor Garcia. It's a case out of the 1990s where the court for the first time decided that electronic tools could be burglars' tools. You know, they used to be crowbars and pickaxes and lockpicks. Those were what were defined as burglar tools in New York. But Victor Garcia used a scanner and a handheld radio and a few other things. And he created an electronic burglar's tool, and the judge applied the law accordingly. So, you know, we're used to seeing traditional law applied when the technology creates an environment where it should be applied. And it is very possible that this judge in this case will look at this set of facts and feel that it does meet the law and find her guilty. So, you know, the courts and the law need to adjust, need to adapt, need to really develop in order to meet the demands of our technologically advanced society.
Right. So you think then in the future, it sounds like that virtual action or sort of your digital presence can almost hold as much consequence legally as a physical one.
We're getting there, and we will be there one day. I think we're there in some areas right now, such as banking. We're there in areas such as harassment in some cases, at least in some states. So, I mean, we don't need to be present isn't. I mean, if you even think about it, how many people work from home, e-commute? How many people are able to spend one day a week at home? So, I mean, ultimately, our society is changing. Students are changing. My students want to learn more online. I don't always force them to come into the classroom, even in traditional classes, where we could meet virtually. So virtual presence is becoming more and more important. It's becoming accepted in the business world, in the academic world. It's becoming accepted by people of all ages with FaceTime and Skype and video chat. So it's we're there. We just need to be able to figure out how to take what we're doing and fold it into our current set of laws or adjust our current set of laws to meet the demand.
Adam Wandt is an assistant professor and deputy chair for academic technology at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York. Adam, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.